that what I believed was going to happen. And I told you that I believe that the sixth seal to the last seal was an account of what was going to happen during the last part of the tribulation period. I put it in my second book. I was afraid to put it in the first book because I was trying to get enough people that didn't think I was crazy. And the seminary wouldn't publish it because what I put in it. So I finally, after being here a while, I just started teaching what I was taught when I was young. And it was right. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about something that I have great confidence in. I'm not going to set a time, but I'm going to point some things out because the time has finally come when I am going to talk about some things that are going to happen during the next 7 years. And at the end of that 7 years, you're going to see the Battle of Armageddon. Now, I wish that I could pass on to young people how sad I am for you, because when I was your age, I wasn't a synoptic analyst. I hadn't gone through Vietnam. I went in the Air Force to avoid combat in Korea, but I ended up paying my dues in Vietnam. I was very much afraid of death. I was a believer, didn't have any doubt in the world that the Lord was going to come. Didn't have any doubt in the world. I couldn't tell the day, week, month, or year. But I was young, and I wanted to live here for quite a while. And as I've said many times, why? Well, I liked my mom, and I liked my grandparents, and I liked mowing yards, and I liked picking dewberries. I liked pitching baseball. I liked that. I loved it. And so I just wasn't ready to go yet. And God knew that, and I knew that, and I felt guilty about it, because the preacher was always talking to me just like I'm talking to you. And he also believed in the late rapture. So when we came down to the fifth seal, I had already taught you in my second book from the fifth seal on to the very end of the tribulation period. I had taught you Daniel's 70th week and how long it was and how the Lord had fulfilled the first 1185 days of the tribulation period. I taught you all that before I ever really started laying the groundwork for what I knew would be difficult, because so many preachers have been misled during what I call the age of the falling away, which is an age of moving the landmarks. And I was a landmarker when I was young. I was taught that. I didn't appreciate the full impetus of it, but I believed it because I was taught it. And finally, when I got old enough, I said, well, why should I be afraid of this? And I wasn't all that old when I suddenly began to lose my fear of it. Because at age 23, I was scripturally baptized. At age 38, I was called to preach. You're looking at a man that you tell him he's smart. I've been trained. Lord, you wouldn't believe how I've been trained. And you wouldn't believe how it was done by God and the way he worked it around. I had no desire to be a synoptic analyst. I was forced to be, because I had the high aptitude for it, and they sent me to school for it at an institution of higher learning. I went to the University of Chicago at times. Then, after that, they sent me back to senior forecasting school. I became a senior forecaster, and I broke in lieutenants when they came in because they didn't know their left foot from their right. I knew the book by which I was taught, but all they knew was how to wander around in the dark. That's kind of the way I was until I got baptized. Then I began to get a little light. And once God called me to preach, and I just said, "Lord, I'm not going through this again. I'll do whatever you want." I promised him that in a billocks in Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska. And that night, God called me to preach. And all of a sudden, I was filled with such grief and such sorrow that I had resisted him, I had grieved him, I had quenched him, his spirit. I got down by the side of the bed and I started praying. That was I know an experience I ever had like that. Well, I did get down on my knees a lot after that. But I prayed and I cried and I prayed and I cried. I'm not saying everybody does that. But you didn't have the track record I had at age 38. You didn't have the deceit that I had inside me. You didn't have the motivation that I had inside me. I surrendered to preach because I wanted to be noticed. You say, "Oh, you aren't called to preach." Don't you think God knows me? And don't you think he called me knowing what he was going to do? He did. And all of a sudden, at the seminary, I worked very hard, got good grades. Everybody thought, "Good old Brother McElmore, he sure is smart." And I loved every minute of it. And I thought my motive was right. I guess if you'd have asked me, I'd ever said it, but I was kind of God's little helper. I prayed from about, I don't know, maybe 9 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning on my knees. My legs, from here down, went to sleep. I didn't have any feeling in them whatsoever. I don't mean they hurt. They hurt a lot, but then finally they just died. And I crawled up on the bed, got myself up there, and I told God, "I'll do whatever you want. I don't care what it is, Lord. I'll do whatever you want." And all of a sudden, I felt a relief because I quit fighting God. And then I had to go through a long experience of learning that I didn't lose my carnal nature. And still, I had this monster living inside me, and he had to be changed. It took a long time. But you know what I finally found out? I couldn't change him. I couldn't. Oh, I'd have periods of time where I can do it. I never could. Finally, one day, I just gave up, and I said, "Lord, the only way he's going to change is if you change him. And Lord, whatever it takes, I'll do it. I'll yield to you, whatever it is." And what he taught me was this: "Tom, let me do it." And then he taught me what I teach here in this church. He taught me going through the seminary. He taught me when I got up here. And I'm sitting here a very happy man in front of you. Because if God hadn't taught me, I'd be the same rotten crumb I was before I got saved in my soul. But I'm not a rotten cracker in my soul. God sealed my soul. He protects me. When I make a mistake, he leads me to repentance. I go and confess my sin to him. If it's a bad enough one, I'll tell you about it. if it's something that would disgrace the church. But those are the things in my life that make me thank God every night, and usually every morning when I wake up, of where I sit right now and how free I am from the condemnation of God, and how only He can change me. But He lets me yield to Him, and He lets His mind be in me when I'm willing. There are two wills in Jesus Christ. The will of the soul of David, which was the soul of God, which was a flesh and blood perfect man. And the other will was the will of God Himself, Jehovah, the one God. Once I discovered that, my yoke got easier. My burden got lighter. And now I can talk to you about things and not have to wonder, Lord, was I demon possessed? You said, did you ever think that? I thought, good Lord, I must be demon possessed. We had experimented with a yogi board. We got it for the kids for Christmas. Is that what you call them?
A Ouija board.
And they played with it, and I just thought it was a toy. It wasn't a toy. It was not a toy. And by the time I discovered that, it scared me to death. I played it with Imogene. When she got on that thing, it would run all over the board. I thought she was lying. Because when I got on there, it didn't do anything. It was dead as a doornail. But when she got on it, before I even got on it, and she'd answer all the questions. I don't care how complicated they were. She didn't know the answers. So finally, I got on that Ouija board. She pulled me over. It pulled me to every one of those answers. I wrote home to my grandmother, McElmurray, and I know she kept an old Bible up in the medicine cabinet, way up high. She kept all the names of all the McElmurrays back as far as she could go. And she had all their names written in there. I didn't know those names. So I did remember my great-great-great-great-grandfather, my sixth-generation forefather. And I did remember his wife's name. And so I didn't remember their name, their full names. And so I had Imogene. I got on there with her. And I said, let's ask for their names. That's the first time I ever knew their full names. All three of them. And they spelled out every one of them. So somebody tells me, don't play with a Ouija board. Because I did. And yesterday I was fighting like mad. I asked God to remove this temptation for me. I was thinking about things I shouldn't think of. Only for a second that I asked God, deliver me from this. And He did, like that. And I thought, Lord, was I demon possessed? No, I went out and burned that thing. They tell me you can't burn them, that they'll always come back or something. No, I burned it. I'm not going to tell you how the flames looked when they went up, because then you'd think I'm crazy. But I burned it, and I'm not demon-possessed. And so I got so bad with evil thoughts that God's the only one that knows what they were. I can't even remember them, hardly. But now here I am. So don't worry, you don't have a demon-possessed preacher. You got a preacher that is very grateful for what God gave him. I don't know how far along I'll get, but I will continue on this till I finish. Now, right here on this chart, prophecy updates 74D, 79D, and 92A. I issued this a long time ago when I first started teaching about Daniel's 70 weeks, which actually only were already fulfilled the first 1,185 days during Christ's earthly ministry. And then I went on over and began to talk about the last 1,335 days. Believe it or not, there were a lot of converts out in what I call the field. A lot of missionary Baptist preachers came to believe it that had never heard of it, and because they were young, or because they were old, and the heresy that they had picked up down through the years, because so many preachers had taught it, they just had a hard time accepting it. Once they accepted it, I never had any problems with them, but they had problems with the people that they taught it to. Some succeeded, some didn't. Most of them succeeded. Now let's take a look at this. You see where in that second little thing down on the bottom, Moab, up above it, it says Ammon, Moab, and Edom. Do you know that that fits perfectly, all three of them, perfectly, inside where the country of Jordan exists today? That's a minor miracle. If you want to know what it is, it's a miraculous thing about the Word. Because Jesus said, and through Daniel, that Ammon, Moab, and Edom would be bypassed. And I wondered, why are they bypassed? And I asked God to help me understand it. That's when I discovered how perfectly they fit in that box. So I thought, I wonder what else that I can learn. And I asked God to help me learn as much as He was willing to help me. I think there's some things God just wants you to wait until He thinks it's time. And lots of things I didn't preach out what I call the field. I went out on all these trips until I got the okay from God. Because God knows what He wants preached, when He wants it preached, and how He wants it preached. And it took me a long time to learn that. Finally, one day, a man took me into his office in about 1992. And I had just done my lecture series for the first time at Texas A&M, at TBNI, Texas Baptist Institute. Later on, I did them at Texas A&M. And Ray Brooks took me into his office. He said, "Brother McMurray, I'd like to ask your opinion about some scriptures." I said, "Okay." He said, "What does this mean?" He said, and he showed me the seventh trumpet rapture. He didn't tell me what it was. He just went down it. And I said, "Well," I said, I'll tell you what it believes, Brother Brooks. I didn't know they were seventh trumpets down there. Had no idea. And I said, "That's the seventh trumpet rapture." I said, "Let me explain it to you." I went through the whole thing with the scriptures. He said, "That's what I believe." He said, "Now at this school, we don't kick people out that believe the first of the week, but," he said, "we do teach the seventh trumpet rapture." And they had taught it for a long time. So I thought, well, I'm not alone. You know, I got to feeling like I was alone, except for God. And the only reason I kept doing it was because I knew God was with me. I knew He was with me. And so I started, in 1992, I started teaching publicly everywhere, the seven trumpet rapture. I lost a lot of friends. I took a lot of flack. But I didn't care anymore. Because not only was I not alone, God had taught that to a lot of other people that wanted to know the truth. And when you want to know the truth, God will let you know this about the seventh trumpet rapture. And God will let you understand a lot of other things. But you've got to want to know the truth. And that's the one saving grace I had. I did want to know the truth. That's why those disciples followed Jesus. They said, "Where goest thou, Master?" He said, "Come and see." And whenever He left and went up to heaven and took the office of the Holy Spirit, He taught them all the things that you find that the disciples didn't understand during their lifetime. You say, "Well, that means God knows what He's doing." You better believe God knows what He's doing. And when you finally come to that conclusion, you want to know more, because you say, "I don't know all this." And you just go ahead, and when you discover you're wrong, you admit it to yourself and to God. If you want to admit it to the church, give them time to understand what you're going to preach, because if you don't, it's going to be tough. Anyway, at the time of the end, so this is end time, shall the king of the south push at him. The time of the end means the tribulation period. That's the time of the end. Well, what is the tribulation period? Well, the tribulation period begins at the seventh trumpet rapture. And the time of the end is the last 1,335 days of the tribulation period. And you're going to be here unless you die before that. You say, "Well, what good is this going to do us?" Then you won't wonder about it anymore. I won't have to fight my carnal nature anymore. I won't have to run to God and say, "Lord, deliver me, deliver me." I'll just say, "Get away from me, Satan." And then it'll be easy. And it'll be easy for you. He says, and the king of the north, that's the Antichrist. Now, the Antichrist is not Erdogan. Erdogan is the man that I warned you about almost, well, in the last century. I warned you when Erdogan came to power in Turkey that he was a snake in Antichrist clothing, but he wasn't the Antichrist. I assured you he was not the Antichrist. He will not be the Antichrist. But he will be replaced by the Antichrist. So when I get to Erdogan, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about, because what's happening over there with Erdogan right now, he's tightening his control. When he first came there, he intended to be the ruler of the Arab world. He intended to form a caliphate there. I was absolutely positive of it. And so at that time, Turkey was not only a secular Islamic nation, they didn't have Sharia law. They were a purely secular nation, and they didn't have Islamic law. So when I picked Turkey, one of the women in this church had, I won't tell you which one, had a disagreement with me on it. She said, "No, they're part of NATO." She said, "They can't." I said, "You just wait and see." I said, "He's going to try to establish a caliphate there." And he said, "See, their ruler had been Ataturk. And the Ottoman Empire, it was the Ottoman Caliphate originally. The Ottoman Empire had spread all the way up into southeastern Europe. It had gone to the gates of northern Italy. It hadn't taken northern Italy. It had gone all the way up through the southeastern part of Europe. When they got up there, they got secularized. And when they got up there, they quit practicing Islamic law. And these fellows that are here in this in this country. Now, they could do the same thing, but they won't. Because the spirit of Antichrist has done got them. Now, in any case, Ataturk came back and he made a secular, non-Sharia law nation in what is known as Turkey today. That's happened. When Erdogan came in, I knew what he was going to do. The first thing he did was to have his wife wear a burqa. They didn't wear burqas over there. They didn't wear those things that I was picking out. They didn't practice Sharia law. And so, right away, he had his wife wearing a burqa. Pretty soon, he wanted the other women to wear burqas. And some of them, out of a guilty conscience, started wearing burqas. Then others started wearing them. And then some sects started practicing Sharia law. And I said, I know what he's doing. The Bible indicated that would happen. And when I get through with this, you'll know exactly why I thought that. So what I did, I just said, okay, I'm going to watch him. He started having purges of the military. Every other ruler that had tried to do what he did before, they'd rush in and clear it up. But Erdogan was very clever. He did it very slowly and very... It's sort of like removing the ancient landmarks. The ancient landmarks were what they were taught before they went up into southeastern Europe. And one by one, he removed them. And I watched him do it. And then ISIS rose up. Some of you call it ISIS. Some of you, ISIL. The L stands for Levant. It means Greater Syria. That's what the Levant was. And so most people call it ISIS because it's easier. But over it was known as the Levant. It went all the way down to Jerusalem. It went all the way across into what they know as this place in northern Iraq. I can't think of the name of it. It went all the way up into well up into Syria. And it was called the Levant. Well, I didn't know that when I was over there. But I wondered what that L stood for. I like to never found out. And I'm thanking Obama for that. He kept calling it ISIL. And I thought, well, he can't be right. You know, it's not right on anything else. But I checked it out, and I finally found out it means the Levant. And I looked at it, and Levant means Greater Syria. So everything that God led me to believe, he verified to me. And after I'd already taught it, I felt overjoyed because then I knew that God was leading me. I didn't have to worry about being demon-possessed. He says, like a whirlwind, the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. I watched them withdraw and into after the last war they had. And surely enough, the Lebanese withdrew back behind a mountain range that goes east-west so they could put their guns on the other side of the mountain because they didn't have any protection against Israel, the Israeli tanks, because they didn't have a east-west range right there at the border of southern Lebanon where Israel ends and Lebanon begins. They gave up that territory. They just moved up, went behind the mountains, put all their weapons behind it, all of them. So when the Israelis attacked, they'd be on the high ground. They'd be down behind the mountains. They'd be able to shoot over the mountains. You'd be surprised what sophisticated weaponry they have. They'll knock off those Israeli tanks like Grant took Richmond. And they got it back there. Then I watched Syria begin to build a defense wall right across where they moved their mountain thing to. And they are going to set up a trap for Israel. You say, does Israel realize that? I hope so. I have a good reason for knowing they might. And I'll tell you about it once Israel attacks. But I'm a great admirer of Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister. And I have reason to know that they might. In any case, they're going to drive Israel south along both sides of the Central Mountain Range. That's where the Palestinians are. They're going to drive all of them out of both sides of it. The Israelis, that's where the Israelis are, on both sides of it, east and west. And they're going to drive them straight south and around through Edom. They're going to drive them down into the Negev. And that's where they're going to be for about 1,335 days. That's coming. Don't tell me I'm smart. Every time Leonard, I compliment him. Leonard knows I mean the Lord. But he's a very humble man. Leonard's learned a lot more than I have in a long time. And he said, it was the Lord. And I say, Leonard, I know it was the Lord. Because I understand. And those teachers, I had those teachers, they understood. They were older men. So some of you that are young, don't do what I did. I'd tell them, oh, sure, yeah, oh, yes. And down inside, I was sure hoping they were wrong about the first of the week. Well, they were wrong about the first of the week. But they were right about the seventh trumpet. And I adopted that. He says, he shall enter also in the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. That is amazing. And I'll be showing you next time why it's amazing. Now look on the back. Every time I teach something, I keep track of what I taught. And if I taught something wrong, I admit it. And I tell you that I was wrong. I used to try to find a way to, what is it that old Bill, the guy that spins stuff.
O'Reilly.
He says, they spin this. Well, I thought, maybe I ought to spin this a little where I don't look so bad. Where I can go ahead and teach it correctly, but spin it where it doesn't look like I made a horrible mistake. You say, preachers don't do that. The dickens they don't. I did. And I didn't want to lie, but I'd spin it. That's what Hillary Clinton is. But Hillary Clinton makes me look like a saint. But I never spin anything that bad. Now, right there in that little place there, in where Lebanon is, Sidon, Tyre, on down to about, you remember that place? That I took you to way up in northern Israel, I told you was once part of, that was part of Israel, but they had taken it back.
Where
that place I took you up to, and it was, Lord have mercy, I thought I'd never forget that. No, that's not it. It was up where the United Nations troops were, and we went down there.
Northeast, yeah.
Yeah, and it was northwest of What? No. Anyway, I forget lots of stuff, but I don't forget Scripture. If you think I don't know why I don't forget Scripture, you're quite wrong. The only reason I can still remember Scripture is because of Almighty God. And the only reason that I can't remember a lot of that other stuff is it's not all that material, and I only had to learn it for a purpose, to let people know that I knew what I was talking about. And anyway, look where Ammon, Moab, and Edom are. Now, at one time, they started a fence in Israel. And the fence in Israel is right here. That encloses Palestinian territory. And in the last century, an Israeli official encouraged the Israelis to build that fence. It's a wall and a fence. Has all kind of equipment along it to catch anybody that goes across it. You can't get by it. But they didn't finish it right up here along the where it goes over to the Jordan River, because they didn't think that they could hold that. Well, they're finishing it right now. So, look over at the map here. Notice how the Ptolemaic kingdom in the southwestern corner extends all the way up into what is Syria today. It went all the way up to Seleucia, which was the Seleucid kingdom that one of the Macedonian generals was given after Alexander fell dead. And notice that it goes all up there. That's where the king of the south will make his attack against the king of the north. But he'll have initial success, but when he gets up to that mountain range, they are going to wipe them out. And the Israeli army is going to turn around and head south like a bunch of jackrabbits. I don't have any doubt about that whatsoever. Now, I'm going to read this last part, and then I'm going to close. This is very current. Most of it's from 2007. Because I did learn some stuff afterwards. I learned I was right. Let me put it this way. I learned God was right. That it wasn't me. So don't give me this stuff anymore. When I compliment you, I'm complimenting the Lord. I'll go ahead and give it to me. I like humble people. But I'm not real fond of people that whistle all the time in church. The uncertainty in the definition of the extent of Syria is aggravated with the etymological confusion of similar sounding names Syria and Assyria. The question of the ultimate etymology taken as exchangeable are synonym from the time of Herodotus, even though in the Roman Empire they referred to it as two separate entities. Roman Syria versus Roman Assyria. A greater Syria in this wider sense would correspond to Greater Assyria, which would include all of the Levant and Mesopotamia. Now, I told people when this started, I said the two terms that you say Assyria or Syria. They're interchangeable. People got away from that when all the archaeologists that were back down here and started saying, that's not right. They didn't go up there and excavate it. But they just said, it can't be right because of this and this and this and this pot and that pot and this pot and that pot. They were wrong. They are interchangeable. Syria, name, Roman Syria and Roman Assyria. Roman Syria and Roman Assyria. Herodotus uses Urea, the EU is pronounced like the EU in Europe, Urea, it's a soft A. Urea, if you wonder where I get all these pronunciations, that's why I took Greek. I didn't want to appear to be an idiot when I started teaching this stuff. Urea uses Urea loosely to refer to Cappadocia. This is from Pipes, an Israeli, who did go up there and excavate all that in 1992. In Greek usage, Syria and Assyria were used almost interchangeably. But in the Roman Empire, Syria and Assyria came to be used as distinct geographical terms. Syria, in the Roman Empire period, referred to those parts of the empire situated between Asia Minor and Egypt. In explanation, the Western Levant, while Assyria was part of the Persian Empire, and only very briefly came under Roman control, marking the historical peak of Roman expansion. So I've got the 4 minutes. So I've gone through these, but I'm going to ask you to keep those. This next section, which has the Oh, they're over there. You did pass those out, didn't you? The other sections over there about, I can't read it from here. Huh? Yeah, I appreciate it. Good. Next, during the next time, I'm going to teach about the Turkey Islamic dictator has developed her Turkey to be one of the 10 horns of Antichrist. One of the ladies in this church that I greatly respect argued with me on this. So I'm not going to mention her name or anything. Well, you say, well, she must not be here. Yeah, you're right, she's not here. You'd think I'd say this if she wasn't. So what do you think I am, an idiot? You say, well, and I'm not saying that to be derogatory, but this is something that we're going to have to watch. He's going to turn that into a caliphate. Then the Antichrist is going to rise up in what we call Syria, probably just where Syria is now. Could be Lebanon, but I doubt it now. I used to think it would probably be Lebanon because that's part of Greater Syria. But I think he'll rise in Syria and he will be the Antichrist. He's not going to come out of ISIS. The leader of ISIS is going to be killed. The Turkish dictator is going to be Erdogan. He's going to be killed. But a man will arise in Syria and in the mass confusion, he will gain the confidence of probably everybody except Israel. And they won't put up with this. And so they will attack. And the U.S. will give them their assurance. They'll help them. They'll do this. They'll do that. But they will do a lot more than Obama's done. But I know, but Hillary Clinton has got the fortitude of a jellyfish. And we may provide some assistance over there to them. You say, what'll that be like that, like the Cold War? I've taught that ever since. I've also taught, and I mean it with all my heart, you don't have to worry about a thermonuclear war. There will not be a thermonuclear war. You say, Brother Michael Murray, you're wrong. No, I'm not. There will not be a thermonuclear war. You say, oh, goody. Wait till you see the earth torn apart by God. You wish you had a thermonuclear war. God tears mountains apart. God rips continents apart. God shakes the foundation of the earth. You say, oh, I'm scared. You say, what if I die? Think who's doing the shaking. Think who's doing the shaking. You're his child. You belong to him. You say, but I'm young. I understand that, but you're his child. You say, well, I don't have long to work for him. I like that message you preached. Oh, Chuck, that was a good message. Oh, that was a good message. God's an equal opportunity employer. It's not how you start. It's not when you start. It's how you finish. It's how you finish. So I don't care how much time you've got left. You've probably got about 6-7 years. Use that time. You say, how am I supposed to use it? In a church that's still preaching the truth. Don't have a baptism that came from a church that isn't teaching the truth. You say, you just want us to join here. I want your soul to be sealed. I want you to be saved by the hand of God. I want you to serve God where you're supposed to. You say, where'd you get all that? That's what I've been through. And that's what I'm going through right now. So, I went a minute over. But that ain't bad. Is it, Summer? No, it's not bad. Robert, would you dismiss us?